Hi everybody, and welcome to another Torn Up interview. And as always, we are so appreciative of the artist that take the time to speak with us here on the show. Now, as you know, this show's a rather special one because we are honouring, probably the greatest Irish rock blues guitarist that ever stood on 2 feet. The country loves him, the world of music loves him, and the man I'm about to introduce to you was his right-hand man for so long. And it is my great honour and privilege to introduce to you Jerry McAvoy. Jerry, how are you?
Not too bad. How are you doing yourself?
I'm not too bad at all. Not too bad. You know, it's a crazy bit of a war that we have at the minute, but I think the mist is rising, and I think we're slowly coming back to some normality. And I think people like yourself, no more than myself, I'm the person that goes to the gig. I've missed it so much, and I'm quite sure that people like yourself have missed performance. So we're all looking forward to things return to some kind of normality in the not too distant future.
Absolutely, in the not too distant future.
Yeah.
Thank heavens.
Jerry, I suppose as we spoke before, you know, there's a few stages in your career, and like what I do with most people, I'd like to go back to Jerry McAvoy as a young man. Just beginning in music, what got you into it? Who were your influences? When did you pick up that bass guitar? What got Jerry McAvoy into music?
Well, what it was, from the very beginning, I was actually playing guitar, six-string guitar. I mean, growing up in the 60s, I mean, one of my favourite bands were the Shadows. I loved the band, I loved the sound, I wanted to be a Shadow. So basically, I managed to get my parents to purchase a guitar for me for Christmas, which wasn't a very good guitar. I had to get it changed because the action was like about 6 inches high. And that's where it started, really. You know, just the love of rock and roll music from the late 50s, early 60s. You know, and I mean, plus the fact, the way they moved on stage, I mean, I wanted to do that. I wanted to be that, you know. So that's the original reason why I took up the guitar.
And Jerry, you know, that was probably at a young enough age too. When did you get the idea, maybe you might even form a band or do something or get the first gig? How did that come about, or who did you collaborate with?
Yeah, I mean, that sort of came about, you know, because lucky enough, in sort of in the 60s, mid-60s, in Belfast, there was a terrific blues scene, a terrific club scene. So myself and my friends, we used to go to clubs in Belfast and did check out these bands. And one of the first bands who were actually a Belfast band that hit me was a band called the Just Five. Had this fantastic frontman, Sam Mahoon, great guitar player, Billy McCoy, who I idolized as a kid. You know, he was fantastic, and that sort of got me thinking, well, why can't we get a band together? And of course, among you know, my friends was Brendan O'Neill, who later became a drummer with Rory as well, and we were at school together. We were in the same school, and Brendan had met this other guy called Jim Ferguson, who was trying to put a band together, and class one day, we were like 15, and Brendan asked me, can I use my little finger? And I says, what the hell is he talking about? Obviously, he was talking about rhythm and blues, being able to play it, you know, a 12 bar, and I didn't know what he was talking about, but I said yes anyway. So that was the origin of we got together. I mean, I didn't even have an amplifier at the time. You know, we managed to get a rehearsal room, and a friend of my father's had a little sweet store in Belfast, and we'd go upstairs in the sweet shop, and Brendan would set up his drums, and us guys would, you know, start playing the guitar. Of course, the only thing you could hear were the drums. So it took a while to convince all our individual parents to buy us a couple of amplifiers. So that sort of got us on the road to playing. The band was called Pride, and we'd play, you know, the clubs, you know, and you know, sort of paying your dues and learning your trade, you know, I mean, bit by bit, you know.
It was, I suppose, look, you know, young guys, I mean, it was an exciting time because, you know, lots of lads, you know, were into music. Well, either music or sport. Usually the fellas were big into the music, weren't just as much into the sport. It was kind of like that. But
it was.
Yeah. If you're into your music, you weren't that much into the sport, because I kind of know that myself, because music would have been my thing too, and sport would have been, it had been there, but I really wouldn't have been. Let's put it like this. If there was a really good band on and there was something really good sporting-wise on, I wouldn't even have to think about it for a second. It'd be the music every time. So I wouldn't have to think about it. Like, it wouldn't, unfortunately for all the sports fans that's listening, sorry, lads, I'm afraid.
Well, I did used to have the odd game of football myself, you know, so it wasn't...
Oh, and I can, and listen, I can watch the occasional match too, no better a man, but if there was a choice to be made and there's a really good band on or there's a good match, the band would win out, I'm afraid. Ah, it would.
Well, there you go.
Maybe watch the highlights later on in the match, but I tell you what, if there's a good live band on, I wouldn't be missing that. So you're kind of, you were into the blues, even though you know, the Shadows and stuff like that at the earlier stage, which was kind of more pop, but then obviously your radar kind of gravitated more then to the blues and formed your first band, Pride. And then as time went on, obviously, Gerry, you know, it become a bit more serious as well. That, you know, you were a school kid and you were playing and you were still at school and all of that. But when did it come to the point where you said, this is what I'm going to do. This is, you know, I'm not...
Became serious.
Huh?
Yeah, I mean, it's sort of... I mean, after the whole pop thing, you know, because, I mean, Pride, we were playing the top 40 of the time, a bit of Tamla Motown, a bit of soul, a bit of this and a bit of that. And then eventually, a friend of mine had the John Mayall album with Eric Clapton, the famous, you know, the Beano comic, Eric Clapton, John Mayall album. So I listened to that and went, wow, I mean, this is something else, you know, that I'd never heard this before. And then, you know, looking at all the songs on that album and who wrote the songs, I mean, you know, Willie Dixon, Otis Reichman, and then I started to investigate these guys, and then I found Muddy Waters, and that was it. And then, wow, this is brilliant, you know. And then sort of the band Pride morphed into a band called Deep Joy, which was a bit more sort of psychedelic. It was a mixture of everything, blues, rock, and psychedelia. You know, how the hell we did that is beyond me. But that was the first serious band. And the lineup changed. Brenton left the band, and Wilger Campbell came in, who was also Rory's first drummer when Rory went solo. And we made the move to England, to London. And that's when it started to become serious.
I imagine when you did that, you know, well, that's it, like it, for anyone, you know, a band that can be young lads in a band and maybe they've a bit of a job and they're doing whatever. But whenever you make that move, you've cut away all the shackles. You're now on your own and it's now go for it. Which many people say is the only way to do it, that you really have to be sink or swim, that it pushes you.
Absolutely, it was a difficult decision to make as well. You know, I mean, you know, between having a girlfriend back in Belfast and you know, parents, and you know, they weren't too happy about me going. I mean, I was 18.
Right, so you're 18, know, heading to London. Yeah,
heading to London. You know, Sin City.
Well, you obviously survived it anyway. So tell me, Gerry, let's move it on to another bit. When did Rory Gallagher first come on your radar? How did that happen?
Rory with his band Taste, Mark One, that's Mark One Taste with Eric Kitterman and Norman Damery on drums, came to Belfast. Rory had heard about the blues scene in Belfast, and there was like a very rich blues scene in Belfast. So he moved up and he lived just outside of Belfast, a place called Ballyhome, I think, with Taste. And I used to go and see him in the clubs. I mean, the Club Rado was famous. You know, Van Morrison opened the Club Rado years before that. But I'd go and see Taste there and different clubs. And they were fantastic. You know, they were something that the Belfast audience hadn't seen for a long time. Because, I mean, everything about the Belfast blues scene, everything was cool. You had to be cool. You know, where Rory was the opposite. He was cool, but the opposite of being cool, he was like a dynamo on stage. And the audiences in Belfast hadn't seen that for a long, long time anyway. And also, in Belfast, there was a music store called Crimble's in Belfast, where young budding musicians would go there on a Saturday morning to try out the guitars, if you're allowed to. And I went in one morning, and Saturday morning, and Rory was sitting in the window playing an acoustic guitar, just trying it out, you know. And Rory was a bit of a hero at this stage around Belfast. You'd see him walking around Belfast, and he'd look great, and people would go, wow, there's Rory Gallagher, you know. And I plucked up the courage and went over and sat down and had a chat with him. And he was very gracious. He spent 10 minutes with me, you know, like, and he didn't tell me to bugger off or whatever. Like, and I was just asking some advice, you know, I'm thinking of getting a band together and so on and so on. He just said, practice. That's all you got to do is practice. And that stuck by me. That advice was fantastic. That's how I first met Rory.
Okay, so you kind of met him, you really met him as a sort of a fan in a way, because you went to the gigs, you seen him play, and little did you know when you had that 10-minute conversation what was going to come out of that too, and I'm dying to hear how it moved to the next level.
Well, as I said before, I mean, the band, Deep Joy, we made the move to London, and we were lucky enough to be in the same stable as Taste. This is Taste Mark II now with John Wilson and Richard McCracken. Robert Stigwood organisation, the agency, the booking agency. So we were lucky enough to be within that booking agency as well. And as luck would have it, we ended up doing quite a few shows with Taste, supporting Taste in England. And towards the end of this is 1970, and towards the end of 1970, I believe Taste actually broke up around October 1970. And the band, I was with Deep Joy, we went back to Belfast because it was pretty tough in London, you know, it was like a starvation diet, for want of better words. And we ended up coming back to Belfast and giving up the ghost, and we played our last gig in the Ulster Hall on New Year's Eve. But prior to that, around about October, November, before we went back to Belfast, we were still playing the clubs in London. And on a couple of occasions, Rory and his brother Donal would come down to the clubs just to check out the band. And I thought of just coming down for a night out, you know, just have a couple of drinks and check out the music and that, you know. But I mean, later I realized that Rory was actually checking out different rhythm sections, you know, because obviously Taste had split up, or were about to split up, and Rory was on the outlook, you know. And, you know, it didn't occur to me at the time. But it's after, you know, everything, you know, the dust had settled and I was back in Belfast and nothing much was happening, and I didn't know whether I wanted to keep on going, you know, because I was so disillusioned by the whole London trip, you know, like, and although we had some great times, but it was hard, you know, it was very difficult. And I got a phone call out of the blue somewhere around the end of January 1971, and I thought at first it was Wilger, you know, because I could hear it was long distance, and it was Rory. And he just sort of did, you know, a couple of niceties, hello Jerry, how you doing, and so on, so Wilger, give me your telephone number, and so on, so on, so on. And after a while, Rory said, do you fancy coming over to London and having a jam session, a bit of a blow with, you know, Wilger's here, and myself and Wilger and yourself, just, we'll get together and have a go, and that's how it started. So I went over to London. Donald, Rory's brother, picked me up at the airport. We drove down to Kensington. Fulham Palace Road, I remember it well. It was a little recording studio, and we went in. Rory was already there, and he had the AC-30 set up, a Stratocaster. Wilger was there with a kit of drums, and I didn't have a bass guitar with me, so they brought one from upstairs. It was a music store upstairs, and they brought it down, and the three of us started jamming, just playing, and it was like, I'm standing there thinking, God almighty, I'm a fan of it. I used to go and see this guy in Taste. I mean, I'm a fan, and now I'm standing next to him playing. It was like, wow. For a 19-year-old kid, you know, I'm thinking, it can't get any better.
No, it was one of them moments, like when you sort of said, well, I've seen this guy play, and now I suppose you're daring to think, am I going to be in the band? Do you know, is this a kind of unofficial, he didn't say it, but it's a kind of an audition, really, to see how things go. He didn't say that.
He didn't say a lot, no. I mean, that was it. We played like for 3 hours, 4 hours, and then We popped in the pub next door, had a lager and lime, and then Donald took me back to the airport. And that was it. I didn't hear anything for about 3 weeks.
Right.
So I thought, so I thought, well, there you go, that's it, I guess. Because I'd heard through the grapevine that he had tried out, and I think he tried out, if I'm correct here, Noel Redding and Mitch Mitchell from the Jimi Hendrix Experience. And I know he had tried out a couple of guys from the north of Ireland, Jerry Michael Duff on drums, and who's the best player, played with the Platinum. The son was in the commitments.
Rob Strong.
Yeah. I heard that Rory had tried them out as well, so I thought, well, there you go. And after about 3 weeks, the phone went again. As Rory, and he said, Jerry DeFancy coming over to London making an album.
Just like that. You're in the band. Like
there you go. So back on the plane. And that was it. I went over and I stayed with Wilger because Wilger had stayed in London. Him and his family lived in London. So then we started recording the first album, which became the Rory Gallagher solo album. Yeah.
That's an amazing story because it's a kind of, Jerry, it's so laid back. Like, if Force Boy rings, I come over here and maybe jam, and over, and then you do that and do it for a few hours and you're flew back and you hear nothing and you hear of all these other guys that you kind of think in your mind, oh, Sir Jesus, they're going to get it, I'm not. And then you get the phone call.
Well, I think Rory, he kept his cards close to his chest, because I think there was a lot of dissent with the breakup of Taste, between the management and Rory and the two lads, and I think Rory wanted to play it as cool as possible, not to get into the same situation again, so that's the way he handled things.
Yeah, well, you see, I've just listened to what you told me there, and I think it's very telling that you said that you jammed for 3 or 4 hours. Because I imagine someone like Rory, if there wasn't a vibe going there, if there wasn't a connection, he wouldn't have played 3 or 4 hours. He might have played for a while, but obviously he knew there was something. Having seen both of you there, it's like telepathic. It's something very, very special. And no doubt it was there in that session. He knew that too, but I suppose he just wanted to take his time, go through the options, but I guarantee he knew that.
Yeah, I'm sure you're absolutely right, but obviously at the time, and that wasn't through my mind, I'm thinking, have I got the gig or not?
You see, it could have been management too, was saying, well, we want you to try this, and whatever, but I guarantee in the back of his mind, the decision was made that day when you were over, but he had to go through the routine of doing all this other and say, no, I want Jerry, and that was
it.
It's just an amazing story. Now, as you know, and as the listeners know, this is a really special show because we have 20 of the best and we could have picked a whole lot more. In fact, it was your good self that picked the songs, and I really like you to say a little bit about the songs and why you picked them, why they're special.
Well, Laundromat is from the first album, but the one I picked was from Live in Europe. I mean, it's a song that, the riff is timeless. I mean, when we recorded that originally on the Rory solo album, the Black and White album, we never rehearsed it. Rory came into the studio one day and said, have a listen to this, guys, and just played it, and we just joined in. And that's got a memory for me, I mean, that's got a nice memory. That's one of the reasons I picked that.
That's amazing.
Yeah, I'm Not Awake Yet was from the Juice album, which was the second album we did. And that was a fun time because what it was, Rory wanted to capture this sort of live thing. So at a certain point, we'd be playing shows in England, and if the show was finished early enough, we just drive down to London, back to London from wherever we were, in Southend or Brighton or whatever, and go into the studio to start recording. And I remember, because we played it live, and I remember Rory played this acoustic with the band live. And I remember thinking, oh, God, what a song. I mean, this is like a pop song.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just a great song. I'm Not Awake Yet.
Yes.
Moonchild from Calling Card, the keyboards had been added to the band. And Moonchild is just a great rocking song. Just a great, great song.
I don't disagree with that.
Yeah, and it does get a fair airing, because a lot of the tribute bands do that song as well, but it's a good song. A Whole Lot of People from the Juice album again is a song that doesn't get a great airing. It's actually not an easy song to play. It's hard to describe the song. We listen to it. It's great.
Yeah.
That's all I can say with that. Shadow Play from Photo Finish. This would have been the first album with the new drummer when Rory changed the lineup back to a 3-piece. Ted McKenna came in.
Yeah.
And Rory had this great knack of writing songs, but also writing songs to suit the musicians in the band. And Ted had come from the sensational Alex Harvey band. Ted was like a big hitter. He was a rock drummer, like, you know, a classic rock drummer, you know.
Yes.
And this song, Shadowplay, to me, is like punk rock. Because I know towards we were recording in San Francisco and the album was shelved. And I know Rory went to see the Sex Pistols.
Yes.
I think it was their last show in San Francisco. And he was knocked out by that whole energy thing. And that's why he went back to the three-piece. And Shadowplay sort of encompasses that, you know, that sort of punk thing and that rock thing, you know. And obviously with Ted McKenna on the drums, it was like it's like World War III.
It's a very driving piece of music. Like, as you say, all three of you together, it's like a war machine. It's something else.
Absolutely. And Just a Smile, from the first album that I was on, is, you know, it fills Rory's... His ballad. He can sing a ballad. He can write a ballad, and it's like a sort of little country ballad thing, and it's quite unique in its own way. You know, I mean, I just like that song. Philby from Top Priority. Well, that describes Rory, because Rory was so into you know, mystery novels, murder novels, detective stories. He was into the whole spy thing, and he was infatuated by he was just so interested in the Kim Philby story. He read lots of stuff about the so-called traitors.
Yeah, and there was a kind of unique sound. There was a sort of unique sound with a bit of sitar on that as well. Was that it was different, not the usual?
Yeah, it was actually a guitar sitar. It's called a choral.
Okay.
A guitar sitar.
Right.
Yeah, it's quite unique. So it's a unique song.
Yeah.
The King of Zydeco from Fresh Evidence. That showed Rory's love for the accordion, because he loved the accordion. I believe his father was an accordion player.
Okay.
And he was really into Clifton Chenier, the New Orleans accordion player, you know, and that was his sort of you know, doff the cap to Clifton Chenier, that song King of Zydeco.
Yeah.
And again, Alexis from Fresh Evidence, which is an instrumental. Which you know, Rory would do very rarely, but he did, you know. And this was dedicated to Alexis Corner, who Rory was a big fan of, you know, and sort of Alexis was the godfather of blues in Britain, really, you know. And he was the man of sort of the whole Rolling Stones thing, and we actually did a couple of shows during the early 70s with Alexis, and he was a great character, and Rory loved him.
Yeah,
Follow Me from Top Priority, yet again, Ted McKenna. The World War III, and a great song. Follow Me, you know. It's yet again, it could be a pop song, but it's rock, you know. But it's a good song. Cruise On Out from Photo Finish, rockabilly. Rory loved his rockabilly. He loved that sort of you know, that sort of gut bucket drum thing, and you know. That's his sort of a...
Well, there's serious rhythm. Serious rhythm to that. The speed of that rhythm.
Indeed.
Something else.
Indeed. I'll Admit You're Gone. It's a love song.
Yeah.
And it showed you what Rory could write, a love song like that, you know. And you know, it's a beautiful, beautiful song. And it doesn't get much of an airing either, you know, because yet again, it's just one of them songs, you know. Lost at Sea from Against the Grain. It's a unique song. It's very unusual, because I remember when we were recording it. I remember I'm trying to do this riff and it's so unusual. I mean, it's so unbluesy. And I thought, you're third Tuesday, you're very well done. Well done. Seven Son of a Seven Son on the Blueprint album. I think this was sort of a takeoff of Finn Bárn Nolan. Was it Finn Bárn Nolan? I think he was the seventh son of the seventh son in Ireland.
Yep.
At the time. I think that was his name.
Yeah.
And Rory had read about him. And he loved that whole sort of mystery thing and that sort of magical thing, the seventh son of the seventh son. And I think somewhere along the line of Rory's family, there was a seventh son of a seventh son. I'm not too sure who it was. But I think that was about Finn Bárn Nolan, I believe. Crest of the Wave from Juice, yet again, another great song, great riff. I haven't heard a lot of people doing this. I mean, we're actually going to have a go at it with my band, Crest of a Wave. But it's, and I think we actually played it maybe four or five times live, and that was it, for whatever reasons, you know. I fall apart from the first album again, yet again. There you go. It's some people, I thought that this is the song about the breakup of taste. It could be taken as a love song. But I've heard people say, oh, it's about, you know, breaking up taste. Like, and I'm sure Rory had a lot of heartache because of that, you know, because you know, Taste were a fantastic band. They were a great, great band. If they had to stay together, they could have reaped the wild ones. They could have been massive. Anyway, that's what I've heard. I Fall Apart is about that, you know. Hands Up from the first Rory album. That was a fun song to play. You know, playing along with Rory's riffs and just fun. Will You Go, Lassie Go? It's an unusual one. This is Rory and Phil Coulter played together. Phil Coulter played and got Rory on his album to play this song, and it's very moving. It's an emotional song. It's very, very moving. Brute Force and Ignorance yet again, another great song with the great and late Ted McKenna on the drums, you know, kicking up a storm again. Great song. Wheels Within Wheels is a song from the Wheels Within Wheels album. It's I think it's very poignant. It's I think Rory's sort of summing up his life and his career in this song. And it's quite sad and quite emotional. That's my top 20.
Oh,
there you go.
That, I'll tell you what, every single song, I can hear in your voice, I can hear just how much it means to you and how much actually it will mean to the listeners to hear the personal choice of a man that spent so long with the most incredibly gifted guitarist that there ever was. So it's, for me to hear you describe all of that, there's a lump in my throat because, you know, I love the music, I love Rory and yourself, and to hear you talk like that, I'm sure every Rory fan out there will feel exactly the same. What an honour, what a privilege for you to bring us in.
That's great.
It's really, and I mean that, it's really so nice the way you describe each song. And I suppose then, sadly, poor Rory passed on, and that must have been devastating, you know, for yourself and for everyone else when it happened.
It was horrendous. I mean, I was at home at the time. I mean, I wasn't with Rory at the time. I'd left Rory in 91. I mean, this was 95 when Rory passed. And I got a phone call from our old tour manager, Phil McDonald, and he was sobbing on the phone. I said, what's wrong? He said he just heard from his brother who was in Germany. I'd heard on the radio in Germany that Rory had passed. I said, no, it can't be true. So I'm trying to ring up Rory's brother, Donald. It took forever to get through. And eventually I did get through to him, and Donald confirmed it. Yeah, Rory had died that morning. Yeah. I mean, I was like, you know, I was dumbstruck, you know. I mean, it's, I don't know. Even though I wasn't playing with Rory at the time, you know, I sort of kept in touch with him, you know, every Christmas. And it was a terrible loss, you know. And it was such a sad way to go, you know. Like, and it shouldn't have happened. No. You know, it was too early. It was too early for a man of his talent as well. You know, it's such a loss.
He was still a very young man. I think from memory, was he 46 or somewhere around that? Was he?
I think it was 47.
47. But he was in his 40s, in his late 40s. He hadn't reached 50.
You know, he was. Yeah, though, it's so young. You know, it's ridiculous.
And then tell me, you know, after going through all of that, Jerry, when did the idea first form about putting something together to play Rory's music, to form Band of Friends? How did that come about?
It sort of came about because I moved to France around 2007. And prior to that, I was listening to the CDs. You know, I couldn't be bothered getting my stereo out, my old stereo, and listening to vinyl, you know. And I was in a bit of a strange time for me. I didn't know whether I was moving on from the band I was with at the time. And I just wanted to make the break. And I moved to France. Well, my wife's French, so that's probably another reason for coming to France. and the good thing is, when I moved here, I managed to get my old stereo. Do you still call them stereos? I don't know.
Oh yeah, oh yeah.
I out of the I dusted off, and and got my vinyl and started to play vinyl again. I'd forgotten how good vinyl sounded. And obviously, a lot of those albums were the Rory albums that I played on, and I started to play them again, and I went, God almighty, I'd forgotten how good these songs were. And I just thought, wouldn't it be great to get a band together and go out and pick these songs and pick the cream of the songs in my mind and do them. Absolutely. And obviously, I had to get the right people together. And lucky enough, Ted McKenna, who had left Rory in 81 and went on to do different things, he had stopped playing. He had a bit of a disappointment with some band, and he decided to go and teach in a college. He was teaching the music business in the college. And I got in touch with Ted and asked him, would he be up for it? And Ted said, yeah, he'd love to do it, you know. And then he said, who's going to play guitar? And a couple of years prior to that, I played with a young guy from Amsterdam in the Netherlands called Marcel Schoppenzel. And he was great. You know, and he loved Rory, and he loved the Rory stuff. And I rang Marcel up, and he said, yeah, he'd love to, you know. So we put it all together and done a couple of rehearsals and took it out on the road. And for the first year, you know, the odd gig here and there, you know, and it just picked up and it started gathering moss. And it's been great ever since. I mean, the band's changed now because sadly we lost Ted in 2019. After that happened, I didn't know whether I wanted to continue either, you know, I wanted to change again. And so I got Brendan O'Neill, who was the obvious choice to me anyway, you know, and Brendan came on board because Brendan played with Rory for 10 years. And then Marcel wanted to do his own thing, and I think he was sort of affected after Ted passed away as well, you know, so Marcel went off and got his own band together, and I got a couple of new guys in, a young guy from Germany called Stefan Graf, and a guitar player from Newcastle upon Tyne, Paul Rose, and the great players, and we managed to get out on tour March last year, and we got 10 shows under our belt, and that was it.
Yeah.
COVID-19
kind of stopped everything. Well, you know, having been lucky enough to have seen you, I've seen you play in Ballyshannon with Ted McKenna. I've seen you play the Harvest Blues in Monaghan. And all I can say is I can only imagine what it must be like if Rory was there. Because the shows the Band of Friends do are simply incredible. The electricity, the connection that you have. I mean, I can see it in you. Your heart and soul's in it. You're constantly egging on the crowd. Come on, come on. And you push them to really. And that's brilliant because energy feeds energy, you know. And it does. It's brilliant. It's like those of us that love music absolutely adore what you do, because you don't just stand there playing your bass, nodding your head. That's not Jerry McAvoy. Jerry McAvoy is in there, but it's just 150 mile an hour hurricane of rock and roll. That's all it is. And folks,
that's good to hear.
I'll tell you one thing, if anyone hasn't seen Band of Friends, when these guys get out on the road, if you want to see blues rock done at its very best, that blows the roof off any venue they're in, then you just have to see this band because they are incredible. Now, we get to the music choices because, as I said to you before, we play four tracks, one before the interview starts and then three during it. So would you maybe give us your selection for Band of Friends, what you would like played on the show, Jerry?
First of all, a track on the last album I played with Rory, Fresh Evidence, a track called Heaven's Gate, which is such an emotionally charged song, and you can hear Rory's crying out. I mean, it's a fabulous song, and we recorded it with a band of friends. I mean, I hope and I like to think we did it some sort of justice, you know, but it's a fantastic song, and the solo that Rory plays in that song, in the middle of the song, it's gut-wrenching. I mean, obviously we couldn't emulate that, you know, because it's impossible to play that, you know, but we tried to, Paul Rose played a solo on it, and he tried to get the same sort of emotion, you know. That's, yeah. Heaven's Gate is one there. Another song, Overnight Bag, was a song I've always loved. And funny enough, you mentioned the Harvest Blues Festival. We did it a couple of years ago, and on the guitar in that particular night with Ted McKenna on drums was a young guy from the Isle of Man who now resides in Chicago called Davey Knowles. And we had Davey on for a couple of tracks this song, Overnight Bag. Davey does it absolute justice. He does a great vocal on it, and it's a great song. Another song which hasn't been released yet, this is a brand new Band of Friends song. It's called One for the Road, and it won't be released for the next couple of months, but you've got it.
thank you.
So that's one there. That's One for the Road. It's a brand new Band of Friends song.
Okay.
And there was another song because we did an online sort of show on St. Patrick's Night, and we'd done a bunch of Rory songs. But because it was St. Patrick's Night, I wanted to try and make it as Irish as possible. And I thought of, you know, besides Rory, who would Rory like, you know, and Rory loved Phil Lynott, and I love Phil Lynott, you know, I got very close to Phil Lynott, I mean, over the years, and we did a show in Punchestown years ago, and the race course, and Phil Lynott got up and played bass with Rory, and I stood down, obviously, and Paul Brady was there as well, and it was fantastic. And as a song I always loved, it was a song called Old Town, which was a song that Phil, you know, towards the end recorded the song. And I thought, let's Band of Friends, seeing as an Irish night, let's give Old Town a crack. And we recorded that song. And to keep it as Irish as possible, I got the lovely Pat McManus in on violin, you know. So it was just our little sort of doff of the cap again to Phil Lynott. That's Old Town.
Oh, I really can't wait to hear those two tracks now. It sounds really special.
Good.
Jerry, you know, what can I say to you, my friend, except to say it's been such an honour to speak with you, to hear the story, because I've loved Rory all my life, as have so many people all over the world. He's probably one of the most loved people in the music world. When you mention Rory Gallagher's name, people smile. You know, he's just... Yeah. Because he was such a genuine character, he had such passion, but he had the full package. He could play guitar, he could sing, and I mean, he was a dynamo. Like, I've watched the videos when he comes on stage, and he just rips the thing up. There's no such thing as Rory standing, you know, looking at his guitar.
Absolutely.
Right? No.
Oh, absolutely.
Neither did you. Both of you were just like two rock and roll tornadoes. You just hit the thing, and that was that. On behalf of everybody here on Radio Home of Rock, on behalf of myself and Colm here on Torn It Up, on this very special show, a tribute to the man himself, Rory, Jerry, I want to thank you so much for doing this, because this makes this show very special for me, and I'm sure it'll make it very special for the many, many, many Rory fans that'll be listening into this. And I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart for doing it, Jerry.
That's fantastic, Jay. Thank you very much for having me.
It's a pleasure.